just step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 462. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined by Nick Squared. Ah, music to my ears and my ears. You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. Each week, we look at theater from many angles, so don't go away so you can see those angles.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up.
Man, you did it! You did it!
It is Wednesday, April 25th, 2018. On the show today, we have the Austin Playhouse and their Festival of New Texas Plays. And later on, we'll be talking to Cabernet Cabaret and Too Darn Hot. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Albuquerque, and Sheboygan, Wisconsin.
At once we'd easily win, and after that I found it deadly dull.
I found it deadly dull. But I said to you, I did it! I did it! I did it! Anybody? Anybody? I did it?
Okay.
Well, hey, we have the band's back together today. Nick Squared, what's up? So I'm going to start. Nick Mayo, you had a great run of Violet last week and the Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards last week and
the Texas Cultural Trust
thing
last week.
And Conspirare. So you're a busy little man.
I am a busy little man, but I am a happy little man.
That's good.
Busy, happy little
busy,
man.
Busy, happy. Well, great. And Nicole Shiro, how are you?
I'm good. I'm here.
Okay. Well, you know what? What I say to you? I say to you, you did it.
You did it. You did it. She said to you, you did it. And indeed you did.
So let's introduce the folks that are here joining us in the studio today. We have the incomparable Cindy Williams. Hi, Cindy.
Hi.
We have Jessica Hughes. Hi, Jess.
Hello.
We have Raina Hardy here.
Hi there.
Hi, Raina. We also have, hold on. I didn't cross out. I forgot which one you are. Wait, you are not Zach Scarborough. You are Nathan Clemenson.
Yes, I am. Hello.
Get right up on that microphone, please.
Hello.
And then Emily Villarreal.
It is I. Hello.
No, it is I. Well, we've got a lot to talk about because so much has happened this past week on the Great White Way.
This is a long list.
Yeah, so we're just going to, you know, zip through them as best we can. And there's other stuff that we want to talk about. We had, count them, 4 Broadway openings this week.
Yes. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro. That means 4.
One really took the waves more than... Like,
well, actually, some took the waves and some like got buried in the waves.
Yes. But what an eclectic 4 openings.
That's true.
They could not be more different each than the other.
So after I read all of these reviews, I said to myself, I did it.
She
I did it.
She did it.
I said, thought I couldn't read, but indeed
she
I
did.
Could. So the first one, speaking of that song, is My Fair Lady with Lauren Ambrose. Who, by the way, I was watching. I love the movie In and Out. Does anybody else love that?
Yes, Kevin Klein.
So I'm watching it and I'm looking. I like to look at the minor characters and look them up on IMDb and see who they were. And one of the kids is Lauren Ambrose.
That's so funny.
And I went, oh my God, that's what I did. Oh my God. So Lauren Ambrose in her Broadway musical debut, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I believe she's...
That would be correct.
She did Awake and Sing with Bartlett Sher, who's
right,
the director.
Who's the director.
So this is her first musical.
Love letter all across the board. Every single critic loved this. Loved her in it. Loved Norbert Leo Butz in it. I only do that because I like to say his name.
He drives me nuts, that Norbert. But
why does he drive you nuts?
Yeah, I've gone through this. I do. He drives me nuts.
Okay,
he's
sort of like Kelly O'Hara in you.
Yes, but like he's not yet. No, because I think Kelly's a good person. But she drives me nuts.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. But she drives. Yeah. No.
Well, so Jesse Green. from the New York Times is the review that we're going to use as our anchor here, and he called it a plush and thrilling revival. Plush and thrilling.
Plush is a good word.
Which many of you would be interested to know that that was my sorority name in college.
Two very different.
So one of the things that was a little, thinking this was going to be fraught, is My Fair Lady, along with some other classical American musicals, are a little not so good in the Me Too movement these days. And My Fair Lady is one of them, because, you know, the classic is she's this puppet of a white man, and he makes her into this image that he likes, and then she leaves and then comes back to take on that role again, is the classic thing.
I think My Fair Lady and Sweet Charity just have great messages for women.
Charity kills me.
I mean, let's just argue about it. It is one of the greatest musicals, though, but I know.
I love the music, don't like the story. But the take on this that Bartlett Shear did, they've really taken making it a discussion of class and gender, which is sort of what Shaw did in the original Pygmalion, mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. And so they did a lot of this stuff. And in this production, Eliza is more the master than he is. And she, Jesse Green? Yeah. He says, she sculpts herself with Higgins as her tool, which I think is sort of a cool thing.
She's a force to watch on stage.
Have you seen her?
I've seen her play Juliet, and I saw her play Juliet in the park with Oscar Isaac as Romeo. She's an amazing, she's a force to be reckoned with on stage. So bravo to them for casting someone like her.
Right, because they took some heat for it.
Yes. Yeah, because she's not your musical darling. I was so happy to, and I love Kelly, but I was so happy that someone else was given an opportunity to sculpt a role like this, and someone as ferocious. I don't think we would have probably seen the same outcome if it wasn't for her as an actress.
I agree. I mean,
she's ferocious.
And she also, her vocal style is not the the lilting, sweet Eliza that you typically get. She's got a little, she's more earthy.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. Well, you remember that revival of Carousel in 94 with Michael Hayden, who is also not a singer, and Sally Murphy, who's not a singer. Mm-hmm. So when you put these actors in these strong musicals, these beautiful shows, a whole other colors come through. So I'm happy they did that.
That's probably why Sondheim is who he is, because he likes to do that. Yeah. Fancy an actress actually knowing and acting a song.
Mm-hmm. So they're using the original orchestrations with 29 players in the pit, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, really good. Love letter in the New York Times. Charles Isherwood said, impeccable is the first word that springs to mind to describe Lincoln Center Theater's revival of Lerner and Lowe's My Fair Lady. Joe Dominowitz of the New York Daily News said it's show. He said it takes you to show tune heaven, which I could deal with.
Yeah.
And then the other thing he talks to about the sound product, he gave Shear the credit for it, but this is something I really, really appreciate. Hollywood Reporter's David Rooney said a significant factor is Shear's admirable refusal to over-amplify his productions, which I think is so amazing and so good. We are so, I get very, very frustrated when all I can hear is amplification and I get nothing acoustically from performers. And so hats off. I would go see this.
Yay, me too.
Okay, on to the next one, shall we? I've not heard of this one. This one was a surprise to me.
Which one?
Harry Potter and the Cursed Child?
No, Lisa.
Unfamiliar.
It's not pronounced that way. Would you like a second go at it?
Harry Potter and the...
No, Lisa.
What is it?
Harry Potter!
Sorry, Harry Potter and the Lost Cursed Child.
Raves,
cursed child. What is this knife I see before me? Cursed child. Directed by John Tiffany, who directed Blackwatch and Zuiloico de Cristal.
also known as
the
Glass
Meninger.
You haven't
been able to throw that in a while. Grass
So this is evidently, when you read did anybody else read the review?
I did.
Yes. I mean, luscious is what this thing's, visually luscious. It's the most expensive straight play to produce on Broadway ever.
$63 million.
But they say you don't see it. It doesn't look like it, which is amazing. Mostly it's... Well, no.
Wait, I wish we had had a camera in here, everybody stopped and was like, yeah, wait, no,
no,
what?
It's a good thing. He talks about in the review, I like the analogy he did. It's like a little black dress that you can't really tell that it cost $20,000, but it's just it's just amazing and you don't know why. And they say it's very simple, but the magicianry, if that is a word, it is now, also sorority name in college.
Simple at 5.5 hours in two productions. Simple, I say.
But I'm going to read this little quote from Ben Brantley. He says, this inspired team bends time to its will with an imagination and discipline that leave room for nary a glitch, making 5 hours of performances pass in a wizardly wink of an eye.
Wow.
They say some of the most eye-boggling illusions you'll ever witness without a visible wire or trapdoor in sight. I mean, I want to see this.
Yeah.
Did you say 5 hours?
It's 5 hours. It's two full length shows. Mm-hmm. So
or
about
you could
2.5 hours.
The Gatsmatos.
So or you could just watch the Gatsmatos.
There better be some magic in it.
Do you watch them in a row or can you like go and?
You can do both. You can buy a package where you see a matinee
just
and an evening.
If you can get a ticket, and if you then can afford it, then you can choose. But you need to get through the other hurdles first. Yes. So good luck with that.
But let me tell you this. You cannot get a ticket.
Exactly.
Elizabeth Bradley of Broadway News said, my wager is that the lucky ones. Oh, I like this one. Talking about kids coming to see the show. Mm-hmm. My wager is that the lucky ones who see these plays will be hooked on theater for life. What could be better than that?
Oh, that's great. Oh, that's true.
That's kind of magical.
Yeah, I like that. And one of the podcasts I listened to that talked about this, they went to see it. And
we should say the elite children that get to see the show. the
white children that get to see this show. But people that listen to the show know my feeling on entrance applause. I'm not a fan of it. Yeah. But these characters get entrance applause. So they're not getting applause for the actors, but it's the characters, which I think is sort of fun.
Yeah, that is fun.
Yeah, okay. There we go. On the other side of the coin.
Let's dance.
Let's not. the Donna Summer musical.
I told you I watched some. You were like, "What'd you think?" I was like, "Well."
Oh my God! So if the, if the last two were united in love letters, this one is united in the opposite. I'll read the opening paragraph by Jesse Green. The biographical jukebox musical, of which Jersey Boys provides a shining example thanks to all the Brill Cream, is the cockroach of Broadway.
Yeah.
It has a small head, a primitive nervous system, and will probably outlast the apocalypse. Just in general about jukebox musicals. So this is a jukebox musical about Donna Summer. It does not have any legs, according to this review and every other review. And one of the things they said that was interesting is they completely gloss over, and this is a Des Makanoff directed piece, which surprises me because I like him.
Yeah. I do too.
Not
you
in this case.
Make bad choices in life sometimes and you can still like someone.
Well, they glossed over, you know, she's got a troubled past, with the LGBT community. She was a hero and then she found God and turned her back on that community.
They damned the community.
Yes. As one way.
She damned the community is what she did.
And they glossed over that. They glossed over a lot of stuff. All of her negative stuff just didn't exist in this piece.
Which is interesting because they really do carry her lifetime with three different Donnas. The young Donna, so it's like you're supposed to be telling the story, but you're not telling the story.
Here's what I think is going to be interesting about this, because when you have to do something like this, which is a biographical piece,
right?
I think that what made Jersey Boys successful is that those guys liked the grit. Like, part of their brand is their grit. So whether it's Donna Summer or Cher coming up, when you have the person in which the musical is about sculpting the performance about them, I mean, I wouldn't want some of my 20s nights being broadcasted on a Broadway stage.
Yeah, but that's what makes it interesting.
But yeah,
that's
I know, but that's what I'm saying. Like, the Jersey Boys did such a great job because their brand is grit. These people are softening their edges and musicalizing themselves, which I think is a challenge. It's a challenge overall. And I'll be interested to see. Obviously, this one didn't go well critically. I'll be interested to see. There's great buzz about the Cher musical.
Yes. Yeah. So, well, and they also take the use of three different performers to play Cher, as you had three different characters to perform Donna Summer, but they have a whole different way of doing it. And these in the Cher, they bend time and space, and the three
they turn back time.
That was good. That was quick. So let me read this one paragraph for Donna Summer, so we can get off of this. But the main problem. is Mr. Makanoff's lowest common denominator style. Summer is neither as slick as his production of Jersey Boys or as tacky as his Dr. Zhivago, yet it seems to want to imitate both.
Ooh.
Yikes. Charles Isherwood said, someone really did leave the damn cake out in the rain. And I'll throw in one more for good measure. As we've learned over the past couple of decades, when jukebox musicals are bad, they are so bad.
Well, they comparing this one to Lennon was also a really big slap because Lennon was huge flop.
Yeah.
So, poor guys.
Yeah, there's a lot more to say, but I'm just not going to do it. And the last one I want to talk about, I mean, this is kind of a travesty of a show. Because the show is travesties.
You're so funny.
Love Letters, all about around a complete love. It's directed by Patrick Marber. And this is the Tom Stoppard play from the 80s, I believe.
I think you are correct.
And then I have this, 1974, sorry, in London. Yep. This is also a transfer from the West End. But I have this bracketed and a question mark by it, so I don't remember why I did that, but I'm going to read it, and we'll all discover this together. When the show transferred to Broadway in 1975, it won both the Tony and the New York Drama Critics Circle Award for Best Play. But theatergoers... But theatergoers were walking out on it in exasperated droves and writing angry letters to the New York Times, which happily endorsed the production. So... Does anybody remember why people were walking out of it in 75? Am I the only one that was alive in 1975?
No,
me and Nicole.
I was alive.
Oh, well, we can all look that up.
Yeah, I don't know. Would you like me to research it while we're on air and find out?
No. The cast is superbly cast. Joe Dominowitz of the New York Daily News said, Broadway's spry revival of travesties is guaranteed to work your gray matter. So, good.
That's exciting.
Yep. Done with the review portion of this thing. Let's just see where next we want to go. I may want to go straight to standby. Yeah, let's talk about the Gypsy Robe. Before we talk about it, I just want everybody to listen to this this little thing from 1976, and this is Bonnie Franklin.
I mean, this is terrific. Here I am, a gypsy from Santa Monica, presenting the award to... maybe I better explain to the audience at home that the term gypsy lovingly applies to all dancers in the Broadway theater.
So gypsies was always termed for chorus members, mostly. And there has been a tradition for years and years and years of a gypsy robe, which is the last show that opened gives the next show that opened... a robe that has something embroidered on or tacked on or sewn on or welded on from the show previous.
Many.
What?
He's been a part of them.
Oh, well, yeah. Anybody that's done a musical has been a part of them. Although I think Oh Brother did not have a gypsy ceremony, which I think is sort of odd. Hmm. We weren't around long enough. But Actors Equity has decided to get rid of the name Gypsy Robe because gypsy... in general, is a negative term for the Roma. And it's sort of sparking some controversy because it's always been... So gypsy in this context has meant people that roam around, and that's what dancers do. So what do y'all have any opinions about the use of that term for gypsies?
When I was a disc jockey, I used to play gypsies, tramps, and thieves, bringing it back around to share. Every time I played it, I got a phone call from the Gypsy Defamation League.
Really?
So they
and
felt
when was
very
this?
Strongly about it till 1989, yeah. 75 to 89.
It's definitely been used as a pejorative for mm-hmm. the Roma community, and I don't know. It's hard. It's tough for me just because this now hits something that's been part of my life for years and years and years. And then, but Equity, I think probably rightly so, is getting rid of the name. Do you have an opinion, Nick?
I like when I'm informed about something that I didn't know. I didn't know that it was a derogatory.
Till this moment?
No. I've heard about this, and there's been a lot of, you know, in our community, bashing of this. Oh my gosh, come on. Why are we doing this? This is taking it a bit too far. For me, I didn't know that it was a derogatory statement. So therefore, I'm always happy in these situations to know.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to know, and I feel like everyone can win in a way.
That's true.
And knowledge is power, and I'm just happy to know. I will always have fondness and memories of the Gypsy robe, just because it's a great lineage.
Well, the robe and the tradition doesn't go away.
Just the name. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm happy just to know the information. I just got back from a vacation in the Mediterranean, where we were, you know, in Rome and all over Italy and Spain and France, and the Gypsy community was there and very uh-huh. present. And there's a negative connotation within those cultures for the Gypsy population as well. So it's interesting. I'm happy to be aware of something that I didn't know.
And I do agree that we even when things are used in a loving nature, if it's pejorative and it hurts people, it should be changed. Tangential to this, I just want to carry on that Bonnie Franklin thing. This the speech that she was doing, which was part of the 1976 Tony Awards. This is a quiz, so listen up.
And all dancers need a choreographer. Desperately. The nominees for Best Choreographer of a Broadway Play are Michael Bennett and Bob Avian, A Chorus Line, Patricia Birch, Pacific Overtures, Bob Fosse, Chicago, and Billy Wilson for Bubbling Brown Sugar. And the winner is...
Okay, who's the winner? Anybody? Y'all can't answer right away.
I'm not allowed to answer.
Anybody?
I'm going to guess Bob Fosse.
Right into that microphone.
I'm going to guess Bob Fosse.
Bob Fosse in for Chicago.
I feel like I'm about to be tricked, though, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
I'm falling for it.
Right,
I'm taking off,
but it's going to be something
because,
else.
Because, I mean, the Chorus Line is in that thing. Yeah. So,
okay, Nicole and Nick, who won that year, 1976?
I don't really know.
Oh, you don't? You know. Don't you know?
Wasn't it either Bob Fosse or Michael Bennett.
All right, well, let's just listen. Let's just listen.
And the winner is... Okay. Michael Bennett and Bob Avian. Chorus Line.
Okay, it was Chorus Line. Anyway, I'm good. I stumped even Nicole Shearer.
No, but now that she's saying that, it couldn't have been. Yeah.
All right, it should have been a Chorus Line, because Chorus Line is everything, even though Bob Fosse is who he is. Chorus Line is kind of the bomb.
So I'm going to talk about one other thing that is very similar to what we were talking about with Gypsy Robe. There's so much I want to talk about here today. But this I thought was interesting. There's a play in Germany that is... I'm trying to find that piece of paper, and I can't find it. A play in Germany that they are offering free tickets if you wear a swastika to the production.
Yeah, I heard about this.
And if you are willing to pay, if you pay full price, you're asked to wear a star. And it is opening, or it opened on the 20th, which is the 129th anniversary of Hitler's birth. And it took a lot of heat. It was meant as satire. It is not, and it was meant to actually call attention to the atrocities of fascism, but it took a lot. It's very, very interesting. Germany, unlike the United States, mm-hmm. when they lost the war, they made all symbols of Nazis illegal. It is illegal to produce symbols of these. So they're skirting with breaking the law, but they also have free speech. So I find that interesting because we should have made the creation of Confederate flags illegal, but that's just my opinion. Not that of this radio station or the board of directors. So interestingly, in Germany, you know, there was a Jewish person that was said, you know, I don't want to be forced to wear a star that my parents were forced to wear during Hitler's regime. I don't know. What do y'all think of all that? I mean, the greater intention is to shine a light on the negative aspects of
Nazism. It was to
start
conversation, and I got where they were going. But for them to, I laughed when they were like, well, we didn't expect this. I'm like, really? Like, really? Because I would have expected that and had that conversation. So maybe I think maybe if you had some talkbacks or some people or some thought behind it, and if people didn't want to participate,
I don't even think that.
But like, I mean, I don't know. It's not something I would do. But I see where they were going. I understand what they were trying to do. But
can you tell me? Because I actually don't. I literally don't. I've heard about this before, and I don't actually understand like the intent of it.
I think the intent of it was to make you feel uncomfortable and to make you, I guess it reminded me of a lesson that I had with a history teacher years ago when we were learning about the Industrial Revolution. We all walked into class that day and he started screaming and yelling at all of us and started making us create tops, and we would have to come and we didn't understand what was going on, and he was throwing them at us, telling that one was wrong, you go back and make six more before it's over. I then understood. I was like, oh, he's trying to get us to relive and understand. I think that's where they were going with something. I'm not saying it's right. I think that's where they were going.
It's making an experience visceral. And right or wrong, and the intent is to really make you feel things that other people felt. If you will.
I feel like it's somewhat patronizing to the audience. I feel like it's having the assumption that we as theater practitioners have more knowledge, more sensitivity, more awareness than the audience does with, you know, discounting their experiences. Yeah. That's my feeling about it.
You know, like you said that if they wore a swastika, they got a discount.
Free.
Okay. So if you wear the swastika of Hitler, you get a free ticket. Like, it's great if you do this. And if you pay full price, you wear the star. So that's a negative thing.
Well, I'm like, how they, so, the response of, we didn't expect this, is just kind of a little like, what did you think was going
exactly. And like the people who like weren't expecting this when they come to the show, they're like, I'm gonna go see this show. What? I have to wear a swastika? What? Yeah. And the people who haven't seen the show, who are just hearing whispers, like, they're gonna be immediate negative responses. Yeah. But people are talking about it, so
that's very cool.
There's that.
Also, not sure what you're supposed to feel. I can kind of track what you're supposed to feel about like having to wear the star, perhaps. Again, I don't know that. Sorry. I can track that. I don't know what they want someone who chooses to wear the swastika for a free ticket to feel. Yeah. That's kind of like,
I would feel guilty.
I can't even wear one with like a stripe through it, like like a Nazi symbol, like it. But there's something about the, there is a casualization, totally not a word, of these symbols, like right now, kind of like the meme-y edgelord internet situation with Nazi symbology happening right now. So where it goes, you know, want to be, to me where it almost goes is like, oh, do you have the ability to be this callous about it? Which is something that people on the internet often try to prove by using like slurs and terrible imagery in order to say, oh, we don't care about this. We're going to break through all of these taboos. And that's the only place
I
could
do it. There are a few taboos that I just think it's impossible to break through, nor should they be broken through. And to me, the Nazi symbology as well as the Confederacy symbology are two of those things that we really should not allow lights to shine upon. Anyway, great discussion. We could spend the whole hour talking about this kind of stuff because it's pretty amazing, and it sparks so much emotion. Speaking of emotion, there is a group of teenagers in Boca Raton, Florida, doing a production of Spring Awakening. Two-thirds of these students were at Parkland during the shooting. And during this rehearsal, so they started the rehearsals before the shooting. Clearly, the show must go on. And I believe it's opening tonight or in the next couple of days.
This weekend, if not tonight.
But the entire original cast and the director, Jonathan Groff, came to watch a rehearsal. And I really wanted to talk more about this. You got a chill, didn't you, just then?
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. They sat and watched the rehearsal and each actor that did it on Broadway spent some time with the actor doing it and they were all there. And we don't have time to really go into depth on this article. There's a link on our website, Offstage On Air. I would suggest reading it. It's really beautiful. And one of the really great things about, I don't know if great things is, but it shows, and Nick, you talk about this all the time, is the theater community and how whenever these tragedies have been unfolding, Parkland, Pulse, things like that, the theater community has really strived. They've come in and they've worked with these communities. They've taken action across the board. It's amazing.
And you see the beauty in the poetry of the theater community shedding light and showing that example. The Parkland students take that light and do it for themselves, right? The fact that these leaders of this movement are theater students. So who's inspiring who at this point? It's a beautiful cycle of inspiration, which is, I'm so glad you brought that up. It's so beautiful. And who's inspiring who is a great place to be.
It's amazing. So let's take a little break. Let's listen to a little bit of Spring Awakening. And yet I wait. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Squared. We've been talking to loads of people, so I'm gonna re-mention them by name later. So just those of you that wanted to know their names, you just wait. Before the show started, we asked Nathan, to choose a number between 2 and 54. What'd you choose? Holler it out.
22.
22. Let's see what it is.
I'm Meredith McCall, and you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin.
You chose a short one.
Yes, you did.
Meredith McCall.
I haven't had a short one like that in a while.
Yeah, you know, Meredith is so wonderful, but when she did that, it was like, really? You want to give us a little bit more? Let's see some of that personality. So, Festival of New Texas Plays at Austin Playhouse. How exciting. So we have here from Austin Playhouse and the Festival of New Plays, one of the writers, the playwrights, Raina Hardy, who wrote, okay, wait, I'm going to try this. Idofuscon.
Very close.
Idofuscon?
Yeah.
Idofuscon.
Yeah, that's
there are a couple
good.
Different ways.
Idofuscon. Interestingly enough, you're going to find this amazing and you're not going to believe me. Sorority name in college. So Rainy. I just gave you a nickname.
Aww.
Raina Hardy is the playwright of one of the plays, which is that one we just said, and the director of that piece is here, Cindy Williams. Hi, Cindy.
Hi.
And then one of the actors and person extraordinaire, Jess Hughes. Hi, Jess.
Hi.
So does somebody want to tell me about the new festival, just the festival in general, and talk about what that is?
Yeah. So last year we had it open to all American playwrights and we received 800 entries, and it was just...
That's a lot to read.
A little overwhelming. Yeah, for
I personally read the full text of over 200 plays. That's
wow.
a lot too.
No, wait,
wow.
Is that true? Did
yes.
you write? Oh, my Lord.
Yes.
Okay.
I was like, she said that with conviction.
She
I'm going to say that was truth.
Yeah. Yeah. So we decided this year to narrow the poll and just do Texas playwrights. Because last year we had Sarah Saltwick's Low Hanging Stars in the group. It was the most attended play. It was really great.
Yeah, I think our feeling was that we could better, this was a better service for us to provide, to just work with Texas playwrights.
Absolutely. Right. Is this the second year of the festival?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And so how many submissions did y'all get of Texas plays?
We got about 100.
100?
Yeah.
That's manageable.
Way different
And
number.
Cindy, how many of those full texts did you read?
34.
Okay. That's also better. Because I would think if you're reading 200 by 120, you're going... I don't really care anymore.
I cried a lot.
That is a lot.
My brain is like,
100 submissions. There was some like 8 or 9 finalists, yes, and narrowed down to 3 that are actually going to be performed, correct?
Yeah.
So those 3 are...
We've got Ida Fuzikon by Raina.
Yep.
We have Nutshell by C. Denby Swanson.
Great name.
And then Monroe by Lisa B. Thompson.
Lisa B. Thompson. We love our women. Lisa B. Thompson.
I saw Lisa B. this weekend and we were talking. I'm like, you have to come on soon, Lisa B. Thompson.
So that's...
C. Denby, those are all... You guys are all the nice power trio there.
Yeah, so that's great. All female playwrights, which is great. Yeah. So let's talk about your piece, Raina. What is it? Tell us, give us the 411.
It's very weird. It's
really from you. I find that odd.
No, it's weirder than my other plays. It's about a couple of sort of artists who are in this underground bunker in this very strange circumstance, making this mysterious machine that's based on a piece of circa 1800s technology made by the great and sonographer Philip de Lutherberg from this period of time when theater had like great tech and really bad scripts that so you don't really
know. Is this a real period of time you're talking about?
Yeah, but it's set in the present time.
Okay.
And
what period of time are you talking about?
It's like the...
Wasn't it like 1780s?
Yeah,
something?
Yeah, around then, okay. Around that turn of the century.
They had great tech back then.
Yeah, great, like...
They had the best iPhones.
Yes. You know, they had like gas lamps and they had pyrotechnicians and lots of clockwork.
They had like Deus Ex Machinas going on.
Yes, yeah. So these people are trying to recreate this strange miniature theater, and then this young man in a crisis period of his life after his father's death kind of crashes into their like weird little world, looking for something from that belonged to his father that he should not have given away to a thrift store, and that's kind of the basis of the conflict.
I actually want to watch that right now.
Yes,
that sounds really nice.
Interestingly enough, we have a scene that we're going to do. Correct?
Yeah.
Somebody want to set that up?
Yeah, this scene actually takes place rather late in the play because, we didn't have another actor except for
Jess
that could come. But so this is a big crisis point in the play. The machine has possibly been destroyed. There's been a fight between the two men. They're injured. And then a phone rings and Fats answers it.
No, not right now. I'm Fatima. No, he can't. He's just not awake right now. Yes, he's here. I don't think he and I did that. No, we met here. I sleep here sometimes. It's called the Physical Cabinet, 1654 Gwendolyn Lane. I'm pretty sure it's not a nightclub. No, I'm sorry. He's just not awake right now. I've been trying. Why are you yelling at me? Okay, but he's not awake, okay?
She holds the phone to her chest.
David, your sister is calling, and she wants to know why you're not at the funeral home right now?
Speaks into the phone again.
I kind of don't think that did anything. Okay.
She holds the phone to her chest.
David, your sister wants you to know that it's 10 o'clock in the morning on the day of your father's freaking funeral.
She speaks into the phone again.
Nope. Okay, you're yelling at me an awful lot. That's not, like, nice of you because I'm trying. I am trying. Nobody will help me. I don't know if you should call the cops or not. Maybe some other people would be better to call. Maybe, like, the ambulance people. Because also Mr. Skander is making weird noises. I don't know how to tell you who Mr. Skander is, but they kind of fought, and I don't know if he's hurt. He's bleeding. He's... Okay. I'll stop right there.
That sounds awesome. What fun. And Cindy, you are directing this piece.
I am indeed.
And one of the things when we do new works, there's a lot of work that happens pre-rehearsal with director and playwright before it ever gets in front of the actors. And then once the actors start getting it on their feet, there's more work that needs to be done. I'm assuming that in this case, it's a little bit more condensed schedule. How much massaging of this piece have you been able to do as you've gone through?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Well, we had our first read-through this week, and
oh my.
I am told that this is the first time Raina ever got to hear the play.
Yeah, that's true.
Even though there have been a few other readings scheduled.
Yeah, it's a little cursed, really. Like, much oh. like that child in Harry Potter. I wrote it in grad school at UT Austin, and it was supposed to be read in the last day of class, but there wasn't enough time, and that's fine. And then there was another reading scheduled in DC, and that also had to be canceled because of some, you know, like technical issues with people's schedules. And so, you know, last night when we actually got together, I'd heard like maybe the first scene read out loud. I had not ever heard the entire thing, and very happy. I feel like, you know, we broke the curse.
So this is, so we just heard a first reading, and we are performing this in a couple of days.
Oh, yes? Yeah, we are.
Oh, my.
You know, the work expands and contracts to fit into the available space.
Exactly. Well, that's very exciting. I wish I had a whole bunch more time to talk about this. But so this gets one showing, right, on Friday at 8 p.m. at Austin Playhouse. And then Nutshell by C. Denby Swanson plays on the 28th at 8 p.m. the next day. And then finally, Lisa B. Thompson's Monroe plays on Sunday at 7 p.m. Is that right?
That yeah. is correct.
And once and we're done. And so, Raina, what after you see this and after it gets the accolades it's no doubt going to get, what are you going to do with it?
I'll, you know, keep rewriting it and tightening it up. And there's no immediate plans for it to go anywhere. But, you know, it's available.
Excellent.
And, you know,
well, thank you guys so much for coming on the show.
Yes. Thank you so much.
And best of luck. This is I'm really excited. I want to come see all three. I've got a heavy weekend of theater going this week.
So much going on.
So that was Raina Hardy, Cindy Williams, and Jessica Williams of Austin Playhouse's Festival of New Texas Plays, April 27th through 29th. For more information, which I didn't bother to ask you for, but go to austinplayhouse.com.
That is great.
Does that sound fair? Okay, great. We will be right back.
Celebrate.
Celebrate.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
We just had a lovely conversation with Raina Hardy, Cindy Williams, and Jess Hughes. And now we're going to go straight to, we're going to skip the local section because I want to make sure we have enough time for everybody. If we do not end up having enough time for the local section and today on In Theater History, we will do that as first part of the backstage session on the podcast. This is a good reason to go to offstageonair.com.
Great reason.
Put your name in and you will get our podcast and you will hear everything that we mean to say since we are so long-winded in the discussion portion of
dun,
our
dun,
show.
Dun.
Bum, bum, bum. Okay, great. So let's let's run right to Cabernet, Cabernet. And one of the things that we are very proud of here, or not so proud of, is that we just, since we're always on the air, we show how the sausage is made. And right before we went on the air, Emily, you tried to ask me a question, and I wasn't able. What was the question?
Okay. I just wanted to know if I could be shameless and film Nathan
of
when he
course.
Sings for us.
Yes, of course. Sure. I didn't know that you had a film camera.
No,
but,
it's just my broken phone.
I know.
But it will get the job done.
I'm just being
Lisa, ornery. It's one of those iTelephones.
I love iTelephones.
Those iTellies?
I have an iTypewriter.
Oh.
It's true. So let me reintroduce you guys. Emily Villarreal is a producer and the founder of Cabernet Cabaret.
That's correct.
It's not easy to say.
Why not?
It's just not easy. And Nathan Clemenson, what is your role is what? I am just a performer.
Performer, yes.
Just a performer. So you don't really count.
The chap.
He's the chappy.
The chap singing.
He's the chappy.
He is one of the only two men in our cast coming
yes.
up. So
oh,
he's
yeah.
one
lovely.
Of the chaps.
One of the chaps.
So this is a tribute to somebody named Cole Porter.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Heard of him.
Who?
Yes.
Cole Porter. He's not only red Who? Hot.
He's too
darn hot.
Darn hot.
So first of all, talk about, so we've had Cabaret Cabernet on before.
You love saying it, by the way.
I don't.
You can say Cab Cab, if that helps.
No, I want to say.
I like the way you're saying
it. I want to say, am I saying it wrong?
I know.
Am I flipping the word?
Yes, but it's totally fine.
Which is
it's
first?
Perfect. Cabernet.
It's Cabernet.
Cabernet. Think about it this way. After a bottle of Cabernet, I do a cabaret.
Cabaret.
But I like cabaret. I like, you know, both versions are kind of fun.
Well, I know. It's true. So tell us about Cabernet. Tell us about all this wine and singing going on.
A few years ago, with a glass of champagne in my hand at an open mic, it was a musical theater open mic called Curtain Call.
We know Curtain Call.
Yeah. My boyfriend and I, Zach, who couldn't be here with us.
Zach Galifianakis?
No, but I wish. No, just
Zach Braff? That's amazing.
Sorry, go on. No, totally.
Wait, is it Zach Scarborough?
Yes.
Even better.
Yeah, that guy. Oh, that's what you were getting.
You
at,
had
his last
you just
name.
Had Jess and Nick fall over on that one. Again, the cameras are not on. Oh.
So, Cabernet Cabaret was born that evening at Curtain Call. We wanted to bring local Austin musical theater performers an opportunity to perform in a casual bar environment in the central downtown Austin area. There aren't a lot of theaters in this area who do musical theater, and they're not very often. So we wanted to do something reoccurring that we would film for them, hopefully provide videos or audio recordings for their reels, and just give them an opportunity to try new material in front of an audience and not in
where?
A full-length production. Oh, it's at Speakeasy!
Oh,
yeah.
I'm so happy to know about this. When I first moved here, I sent a letter to Catherine Catmull at the Chronicle and said, where do people hang out and sing? I want the Marie's Crisis in Austin.
Yeah, well,
And she said, nowhere. So I'm there so has, happy to know.
There has been several iterations of these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So there was Stuart Moulton did a Austin Cabaret Theater, had a monthly cabaret.
I was about to say Stuart did
that
one.
didn't live a terribly long. There's Curtain Call, which has come in and out several times over the years.
Kind of gone in and out, yeah.
There's Industry Night, which is a little bit more of a variety show. And then there's Cabernet Cabaret. Mm-hmm. And
what was that, Lisa?
I said it right that
time. I know,
time.
But it was great. I wanted you to say it again.
Don't want to say it a second time. So how long have y'all been doing it?
March of 2016.
Okay, so that's about a year if I'm doing my a year and a month.
Anybody? 2 years.
Anybody?
It's 18.
That's good. So, do you do it monthly?
No. When we first came up with it, we wanted to do 4 a year, and mm-hmm. we found out that was way too much. We did 3 in a year, and it was actually like a year from a while ago that we came here last time, and then we're working on our 4th. So it's been 4.
Yeah. Awesome. So what makes this a little bit more different and makes this different from Curtain Call? Curtain Call was very much like a cast party in New York where people come in, they sign up to sing, they hand music and they sing. Mm-hmm. This is rehearsed.
It is. We run a very, very short rehearsal process, like 5 to 6 rehearsals max. Actors sign a contract that they have to do their homework. They have to work outside of rehearsal, make sure they're prepared. There's a lot of communication outside of rehearsal, and we come in, we make finishing touches, add some tweaks with the accompaniment, and then go on stage.
Nathan, this did you do your homework?
I sure.
That's
hope
why
I
he's
did.
Here.
So, yes, I made
he's
it here.
Here because he did.
You're gonna sing a little song for us, are you
yes,
not?
Yes, I
what
am.
What are you gonna sing?
A little ditty.
It is "Don't Fence Me In," which is like one of the only songs that
it
he
is
wrote.
It is Cole Porter, from country. What I understand. It's the only country song that Cole Porter attempted to write.
As much
for
as
good
can
reason.
Yeah. You exactly. can tell. There, you can see right through it.
Actually,
Cole
I don't
Porter's
think I knew that
style.
Cole Porter wrote that. I just want to say that. Okay. Well, let's take a listen to Nathan Clemenson singing "Don't Fence Me In." And are you hearing it through your headphones okay?
No, I am not.
No, you're not. So while we continue to chat, can one of my able assistants assist him in making sure that... Wait.
There it is.
You got it. Okay, here we go. Ready?
Yes.
And go.
Wildcat Kelly, looking mighty pale, was standing by the sheriff's side. when that sheriff said, I'm sending you to jail, Wildcat raised his head and cried, oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in, let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in, let me be by myself in the evening breeze. Listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in, just turn me loose. Let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western skies. On my cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see the mountains rise. I want to ride to the ridge where the west commences, gaze at the moon until I lose my senses. I can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me in. Wildcat Kelly's back again in town, standing by his sweetheart's side. And when his sweetheart said, come on, let's settle down, Wildcat raised his head and cried, oh, give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in, let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in, let me be by myself in the evening breeze. Listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in, just turn me. Let me straddle my old saddle underneath the western skies. On my cayuse, let me wander over yonder till I see the mountains rise. I want to ride to the ridge where the west commences, gaze at the moon until I lose my senses. I can't look at hobbles and I can't stand fences. Don't fence me.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
awesome.
Fun. Yeah. It's hard not to play when you listen to that.
Right. Yeah, I was about to go, were we distracting you? Because we did kind of just
tried really hard
to make it a country tune. Like, it's like
the
most overly country.
It is. Don't fence me in. So what else do we have to look forward to at this year's Cabernet Cabaret?
Well, we're holding an art auction throughout. We did that during Bewitched, where we showcase local Austin artists and their artwork. So that's fun. Also, all cast members are singing one solo of their choice that isn't Cole Porter. Some cast members did choose a Cole Porter song.
That was your solo of choice?
This was what I gave him.
What is your solo of choice?
I'm doing Let Me Drown from The Wild Party, which is super fun.
Which Wild Party?
Aha, it's Lachuza.
Okay.
Yeah, he's opening up the second act with that one. Gonna get them drinking.
Nice. And who else, who are some of the highlights of the other performers?
Kristen DeGroote, Lucy Abramowitz, Carissa Memerick, Amber Lackey, Jacob Barber, Brianna... Clairol.
I have it written down right here. Oh, Brianna Clairol.
You have a cheat sheet. Thank you. Rodrigo Zaragoza. He's my AD. He's also making a guest appearance. Creighton Mensch is also making a guest appearance.
He's a mensch.
Really?
I saw your mouth open into it.
We have Danielle Kane. Did I forget anybody?
Clarissa Memrick, Lucy Abramowitz.
I don't know if you said those, but I did. Anyway, well, awesome.
And are you performing, Emily?
I am. What are you singing?
I
give myself a little treat every time I put one of these on and sing. I'm singing If You Ever See Me Talking to a Sailor.
And it's really good.
From The Last Ship by Sting. It's a very angry song.
Yeah, that whole show was a little angry.
Yeah, it's a little bit of an angry show.
So when does this show happen?
May 2nd.
May 2nd. And you said it is the Speakeasy. And the Speakeasy is over there on Congress and like some street.
Yeah. But if you just put Speakeasy on Congress,
it's like 8th, I think.
Yeah.
I'm going to say 8th.
Yeah, 8th.
No, I want to say 4th. It's the other direction. 4th.
Yeah,
I want to say 5th.
Yeah, 5th. What she said.
It's one of those single numbers.
That's exciting. So we will look forward to seeing you there on the set. What day of the week is it? It's Wednesday.
It's a Wednesday night.
Awesome. Yes. A week from tonight.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yep.
Well, great. Thank you guys for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
We'll see you next time. And hopefully you can stick around and talk to us backstage.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. And you can learn a little bit about Today in Theater History.
Today in Theater History.
All
right. So let's take a little break and come right back. That was, I've got to do my outro here. Cabaret, It's Too Darn Hot. That was Emily Villarreal and Nathan Clemenson, and not Zach Scarborough, Braff, or Galifianakis.
Or Morris.
It is playing May 2nd at the Speakeasy. For more information, check Facebook for Cabaret ATX. We'll be right back.
I'd like to sup with my baby tonight.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
We just had a lovely discussion with Emily Villarreal and Nathan Clemenson, and we've just run out of time. So here's the deal, you guys.
What's the deal?
We're going to talk local stuff. We have a lot of local stuff I want to talk about.
Yeah.
We're going to do that at Backstage at Offstage, so you can get that by going to offstageonair.com and putting your name in the box. We'll just send it to you, or you can get us on iTunes.
Stitcher.
Anywhere you will listen to podcasts, really.
We're there.
Really, yeah. And
you can leave a great review while you're there.
Please do, because we need that. We need people to like us.
Please.
We have a lot of issues.
Like us, please. Do it.
Well, it's fun to have the gang all together again. Woo-hoo! It's been so long. So that's it. We were able to complete this show.
We were.
It was touch and go there for a while. But we learned how to say Cabaret.
Yes.
We also learned how to say the name of that show that I have no idea how it was pronounced.
Lisa, you did it. You did it.
Jess is just standing in the corner.
You didn't think I could do it, but indeed I did.
You did it.
You did it.
Well, I could have done this all night. Well, it would have been loverly.
It would have been loverly. But, you know what? Later on the street where you live, I'll find you.
Okay, well, that's... just jump onto the Ascot Gavotte. So that's it for today. Stand by for Austin Modern News. They're up here next on the terrestrial radio. Stick around if you're listening to us on the podcast for Backstage at Offstage. You're going to learn a lot of really great things. And then we're going to go. One of the things that we would have talked about on Today in Theater History is the fact that this is the anniversary of the opening of Secret Garden.
Oh my God. I love that.
So let's listen to a little bit of that as we leave, shall we?
Yeah.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
I need a place where I can go, where I can whisper what I know, where I can whisper who I am.
Well, the curtain has just come down on Leaving Mr. Mayo, the musical, the story of a hapless young man who lived in a city full of friends and love and decided to turn his back on them.
So he abandoned Lisa and Nicole.
And to go elsewhere. Bon voyage, Nick Mayo, to New York City.
So sweet.
New York City!
New York City!
A boy is born in Mississippi.
You just pulled Stevie Wonder out. That is everything, Lisa.
I did.
Look at that pop culture reference say you can never make.
Well, that's back in the day, though.
But
that's it.
It's still relevant. It's
well, we are here. The show that we just mentioned, which I already forgot the name of, has come down. We have left the stage door. We've gone down the stairs. We are standing in puddles of unnamed liquid right here next to the dumpsters back of the theater. And we have here with us Emily Villarreal. Welcome to Backstage.
Hello.
Yeah, you have to talk. Yeah. And Nathan Clemenson. Hi.
Hello.
So let's just start with this. There's a lot of stuff that we were unable to do during the terrestrial part of the radio. And one of the things you want to do is give away a couple of tickets.
I do.
The tickets, by the way, the rules do not apply here backstage. How much are tickets? Just if you were
$10.
To purchase them. But you want to give a couple away.
I do. Right. I want to give away a table and some drinks, too.
A table and some drinks. So what does that mean? So one winner gets a table and some drinks.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So here's what we're going to do. Do you want to make them do anything? Like, do you want to have them answer a Cole Porter question or something?
Oh, I love that. Yes.
Make them work.
Sure. What kind of question?
What if we name one Broadway show in which Cole Porter wrote the music that won the Tony for Best Musical?
Okay.
Mm. Okay. Yep. So answer that. Put that in an email. Send it to lisa@offstageonair.com. If you're the first person to get it right, you will win a table with drinks at Cabernet Cabaret on May 2nd. Uh-huh. Yes. There you go.
Great.
Voila.
Perfect.
Start Googling now.
Yeah, really.
So locally, I did want to talk about, and I'm sorry we weren't able to do this on the main radio show. We had the Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards that happened last Wednesday, a week ago today. I was unable to go, and I was hoping we'd be able to do this so that Nick could tell us who won.
But he could have told us everything.
He could have told us everything because he was there. It was an amazing experience. I do know that city council person Jimmy Flanagan sang a parody of the King George song from Hamilton the stage. That's the one thing I do know about it.
Dun, dun, dun.
So Greater Austin High School Musical Theater Awards, you're going to want to try to go to it next year. So you have 357 days to plan.
Something like that.
Dun, dun, dun. The other thing I want to talk about locally is Scriptworks annual Out of Ink Festival. This is a 10-minute play festival where playwrights are given three things that plays have to hit. And of course, I don't have the information here that what it is. But this is in celebration of their 15th anniversary, 10th anniversary, 25th anniversary.
That sounds right.
But it has to do with time. And the Out of Inks Festival starts this Thursday at Hyde Park Theater. And it's definitely worthwhile seeing. It's 5 10-minute plays.
Cool. Dun, dun, dun.
And what do you want to talk about, Nicole, locally?
I wanted to talk. Tapestry Dance is doing their April Fool's performance, and it's coming up. It opens tomorrow night, runs through May 6th. At the Rollins, and I love me some dance. I went and saw Hubbard Street Dance.
Yeah, you said it was great.
Covenant Chicago last week, and I actually have to tell you, I'm really excited. Did you see what Ballet Austin is doing next?
Peter Pan?
Peter Pan!
Oh, doing Peter Pan.
And it makes me excited when I see it.
Looks really cool.
That's Mother's Day weekend.
I want to see.
I know.
You just blew the microphones out with that.
I'm sorry, Peter Pan. It's exciting.
Nicole has been in this little timid voice, which is uncharacteristic. So I had her volume way up, and then you went back to old Nicole.
Well, it was Peter Pan. Peter kind of does
you
that
have
to me. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah,
I got really excited about that.
Excellent.
There's been a lot of good dance lately.
There has been.
There's been like really amazing dance lately. So
Part of Fusebox Festival, Ground Floor Theater had, I don't know the names of them. We had three dance companies. We had, oh my God, I just lost her name. Mayor. A Japanese group from Tokyo. We had Lindsay Taylor, who did a piece, which was really fun. And then Lindsay Taylor's piece was really fun. She's local. And then Johnny Mercer, there's a third name in there, from New York City with his company, just blew me away with the work they did.
Yeah, the dance has been up on the bar lately.
Pretty amazing.
I'm kind of excited. And can I mention one thing we didn't, before we go diving into interviewee time, one thing we didn't get to mention?
The Groves?
The Groves.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm not as excited as you are.
You're not excited about the Groves co-hosting the Tonys?
No.
I could care less about Sarah. I'm excited about the Groves.
Yeah. Josh
Groban. No. Yes. Yeah. The Groves. Yeah. I'm like, come on.
I'm missing really the days where it was more theatery.
I still wish it was Hugh Jackman or Neil Patrick Harris. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I mean, if it's going to be like womp, womp, womp and not get excited, the Groves turn that around for me.
I actually do think the two of them are really, really good.
Well,
he's another rainbows and unicorns
kind of guy.
The ratings for the Tonys have continually gone down, down, and down.
Oh,
we really want to keep them on the air.
Why didn't they ask Kevin Spacey back?
Oh, my God.
Hilarious.
Sorry, I had to give you a funny burn.
Yeah, welcome. We're just going to go right. We're going to just jump right into today in theater history.
Today in theater history. What happened?
We're going to just start back in 1967.
Boomy, boomy year.
Yeah, it's the first year in today's that I was alive for. Little Murders at the Broadhurst Theater is a Jules Feiffer show. It was a black comedy about apathetic responses to violence. It ran for 7 performances.
That just you just said it was a comedy?
Black comedy.
Yeah, I know.
Dark comedy.
Yeah, I know that.
It starred Barbara Cook, Elliot Gould, Haywood Hale, Ruth White. It had a good cast.
It's a great cast. Yeah. I find dark comedy and violence just all very interesting. Oh. Mm. Yeah.
also opening today was Big River.
Oh, nice.
That's the Huckleberry Finn story.
Yeah. Some great music in that.
It had Daniel H. Jenkins, Ron Richardson, John Goodman, Bob Gunton, Rachel Bean, Renee Aberjois.
John Goodman was in Big River?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, interesting.
And then we talked about it just briefly at the very end in 1991. Secret Garden opened. Susan Schulman directed. I had a whole thing about Susan Schulman that we had to skip over, which is, hold on, I got to find the name of it. Look for this documentary called Bathtubs Over Broadway. It talks about industrial theater, which is where I worked for 25 or 30 years, along with Susan Schulman, and I did several shows together. And she's part of that Bathtubs Over Broadway, and it talks about the unknown world of industrial theater. 2009 is the anniversary of the death of Bea Arthur.
Oh, no.
You know, I just, like, 2-3 days ago was like, how long has it been since Bea Arthur's passed? And I was shocked when I looked that up to realize it was that long
That's
ago.
Crazy.
She originated the rule.
Seems like yesterday.
Yeah.
She originated the roles of Vera Charles and Mame, and mm-hmm. I did not realize this. She was Yenta the Matchmaker, the original.
I knew that.
Yeah.
Well, that I knew.
You know everything.
Did you know she was on Golden Girls?
I did.
Did you know she was on Maude?
I did.
I loved Maude.
Did you know that she's Mr. and Mrs. Arthur's little girl?
Yeah, I did.
It's true.
I know.
That be. So 2010, there was a revival of Promises, Promises. Promises, Promises, I'm all through with promises now. I don't know how.
Who was in that? There were some good people in it, wasn't it?
Somebody named Christian Chenoweth.
That's what it was, yeah.
And someone else named Sean Hayes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right.
So, of course, that music was written by Hal David and Burt Bacharach. The late Burt Bacharach.
I've been talking about Burt Bacharach. We had a whole argument about Burt Bacharach with my family last week.
I didn't realize it was based on the film The Apartment.
Was it really?
Mm-hmm. Also in the show was Katie Finneran, amongst other people. 2013.
Katie Finneran was in. Oh, yes, she was in that because I laughed that the Tony that she won for that was exactly the same. She played that character again as Miss Hannigan and Annie. She made me angry.
There you go.
I do remember that now. It's like, oh, you played Miss Hannigan, just like Promises, Promises. Get a new gig.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. But Anthony Warlaw, he was everything.
Oh, Anthony.
We've got magic to do just for you. So this 2013, the revival of Pippin, the Diane Paulus, wonderful version of Pippin, with, in my opinion, a bad new ending. Don't like the new ending.
Yes, but here's the thing. I've never liked that show. I've always loved the music. I'm always like, buddy, find yourself, move along. The show takes too long. And I actually fell in love with the show. It was the first time I saw
the show, but that's not because of the ending.
No, it was the talent.
Yeah, it was
Andrea Martin. Let's face it.
It was a great production. I did not see Andrea Martin.
Oh my God,
but,
Andrea Martin. I mean, I was standing up four songs in.
All right, okay.
Oh my God.
We got it. We got it.
Oh my God. So good.
And in 2016, this was the opening of Fully Committed, starring Jesse Tyler Ferguson. I would have loved to have seen that.
Me too. And
that's a wonderful play.
2 years ago, huh? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Birthdays. Tchaikovsky.
I don't know how to say happy birthday.
Tchaikovsky. also, Al Pacino.
Al Pacino.
Wow. He's got a show coming up this year.
He does? What's he doing?
Yeah. I forgot. I'll tell you more on it. We may know someone associated with the show, so hopefully we can get some interviews.
And Hank Azara. So, now that's it for today in theater history.
Today, I think it's Hemingway. It's a show on Hemingway.
Okay. So as I was getting ready to get dressed to come to the show today, I didn't know whether to wear this or my Hemingway.
Yeah.
It's true. I keep my Hanway right next to my Grecian urn.
You're so fun. One Grecian urn.
Okay. So we're here to learn now that we are in the official backstage portion of
is
the show.
Is it officially that portion?
It is. We have Emily Villarreal and Nathan Clements. And Emily, you've been on the show before. Have you been backstage before?
I have.
You have with me?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I remember. I know, I'm terrible.
Okay, that was funny.
So then in that case, I'm gonna start with Nathan. Which, cool. By the way, I have to tell you, I didn't mention this before, I love your hot dogs.
Oh my gosh.
You probably never heard that
stopped
before.
And looked at you like, what? And
bad now joke.
Just bad joke.
I've heard it so,
so
many
Nathan,
times.
So, Nathan, where are you from?
I was born in Minnesota.
Minnesota. Oh, that's a really great place there.
It's a great place, don't
so
you?
It's the home of Prince. It's a good place.
Oh, yes,
were you
it
from
is.
Minneapolis then?
I'm from St. Paul.
You're from St. Paul. Yes. The other one.
St. Paul, yes. But, I mean, Minneapolis.
I just heard a podcast
right
that was recorded in St. Paul.
Oh, yeah.
Pod Save America.
He drinks a lot of pop there.
yes. So you're from St. Paul. So, well, Minneapolis, people are from the Twin Cities area just love the Twin Cities. Do you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I only lived there until I was four.
Oh, so okay.
But I
then
went
where?
There pretty much every
you
every
still
year.
Call it okay. The
yeah.
Because the grandpappies are still there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and all of my family.
Where did you move at 4 years
cousins.
Old?
Well, I moved to Illinois.
Which part?
Northwest of Chicago, so it's an hour and a half.
What,
I mean,
what town?
McHenry, Illinois.
McHenry.
Ever heard of it.
Yep.
No.
So
yes,
here's the interesting thing about Illinois. Okay. So if it's not in Chicago, so everybody mm-hmm. knows that Chicago is the top of Illinois.
Oh, yes.
But it goes further north by probably 60 miles or so.
A good amount.
But based if off. You are north of the city or if you're anywhere that is not in Chicago, you are a downstater.
Oh, yeah.
No matter whether you're north or south. So you're a downstater. What were you doing in that part of Illinois?
You know, my dad just moved there right. with us.
Did you get to did you spend the rest of your growing up years there?
Yeah, pretty much until I was 18.
Okay, did you spend a lot of time in the Chicagoland area?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Chicago's
Chicago
great.
Is wonderful.
Love it.
I'm naughty when I'm there. I can't do more than 24 hours. I turn into like naughty.
Were you part of the theater community in Chicago?
Not really in Chicago, mm-hmm. no. I mean, I mostly did just high school stuff.
So you did high school theater?
Yeah.
Did you do musical theater?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yes,
awesome. What did you, were you that kid that was always the lead?
No, actually, I wasn't.
His facial I'm expression
a little...
was everything.
Surprisingly, no. No, I mean, I got lead parts, but a lot of the times I was...
you weren't that obnoxious kid that always got the lead and it was expected to get the lead.
No,
good,
until
good.
My senior year.
Oh. And then
until
it was like,
my
yeah.
senior year! Hey, man, you
so what
the
was
real.
Your... So is that where you started in theater was high school?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, pretty much. Secret Garden actually was the first thing that I saw that got me into it. So
really? Where yes. did you see it?
At my high school.
At high school. Yeah. Wow, cool.
Yeah.
I have never seen Secret Garden.
Oh,
I know.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and you know music. That like I think Mandy Patinkin, he's another he's
you
the man
like
the nails on chalkboard mm-hmm. for me. And I just loved that
yep.
show.
It's yeah. It's
yeah,
good.
It's a special. Yes.
Yep. Okay, so Secret Garden was that thing. So we actually talked about this before. For me, it was, Fiddler probably is what sort of cemented me.
Oh, yeah.
The first musical I saw was West Side Story. What about you, Emily?
Camelot.
Camelot, where?
Camelot.
The movie.
My oh, the
mother,
movie. Uh-huh.
Richard Harris. I just, like, love that musical. I love the period.
Have you ever done it?
I haven't.
You could
really
be a good
role.
Dulcinea.
Okay.
You could totally be Dulcinea.
She's like, okay.
I want to be Guinevere. No, okay, it's fine. No, I've never done it, but someday.
Yeah, because they just did it at Austin Playhouse about 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh,
wow. And the Georgetown Palace did it a few years ago, too.
Yeah, it was one of those shows that I thought I had seen before, but as soon as I sat down and watched it,
you were
I went,
like, I've
wait,
never seen this.
I've never seen this before. Really? Okay.
That's kind of funny.
And what was it? I know we've talked about this. What was it? What was the show for you that like made you that switch that switch?
It was Peter Pan and Annie.
I probably asked you that a whole bunch of times.
I was just about to go, we've already brought up both of them
today. I can't
today.
Be expected to remember things.
No, Peter Pan and Annie, man, those did it for me.
So what did you do when you left high school?
I went to Ball State for 1 year, and then
did you play ball there?
I was a baller.
Uh-huh.
Oh yeah, you know.
Where is Ball State?
Indiana.
Okay. I was like, it's Indiana. The mascot is the little red cardinal. Not a great place.
Yes.
But you went for 1 year.
Tweet, tweet.
And to study theater?
I went for theater, and then I was.
Do they have a good theater school?
They actually do.
I was gonna say, I've heard Ball State's is pretty. I had an ex-boyfriend that went to Ball State, not for theater. He was a tech guy. But.
Yeah, no, that's pretty exclusive.
I would say. For some reason, you said after a year, I'm.
I wanted to do musical theater, so I decided.
Where'd you go?
I went to the University of the Arts in Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, where your life is healthier.
Yeah, that is. I went to school there.
So not true.
Is it in the city?
Huh?
Is it in the city?
Yeah, it's literally right, and smack dab right on Broad Street.
You can go run the stairs like Rocky.
So you've been all over the place.
The corner and get a cheesesteak.
You've done the Northeast thing. You've done the Midwest thing. And now you've done the Southwest thing. What brought you here to Austin, Texas?
So me and my roommate, we write music together. Mm-hmm. And she was like, hey, come down with me.
Who's your roommate? Give a shout out to your roommate.
Oh, her name is Tara Norman. She's a fourth grade teacher, and she's super, super awesome.
Okay, I love this. She's
SSA, as we call that in the business.
SSA.
So y'all write music together. What kind of music do you write?
It's like folky, and it can get pretty funny at times.
Folky funny?
Folky funny.
FF?
FF. Yes, exactly. Yeah, but she's from San Antonio, so I came here.
Oh, cool.
Her. Yeah.
Cool.
On a whim.
And so what how much theater do you like? Go to see theater here a lot? Do you like, are you like thrown in?
It took me a second. After coming here, I was like, okay, I really need to figure out my life. And I lost 90 pounds.
90 pounds?
This last year. So that's probably why I wasn't the lead in high school all the time, but you know. But yeah. And
well, you look marvelous.
Thank you very much.
And our radio listeners will all agree.
They can see the transformation through the airwaves.
Yes, they can. But yeah, so I kind of took a little
bit
of a break.
Did you see White Rabbit, Red Rabbit? Because I know Emily didn't.
Oh.
I did not. I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry.
It's all right. It wasn't very good.
Oh. Oh my gosh,
that's
you're
not
awful.
True. It was
really good.
It was awesome. So, Emily, what's new in your life? Other than this rocking haircut.
Yeah,
you
I was gonna say, well, I shaved my head.
Not all of it, folks.
Not all of it, just one side. What's new? Just you know, working.
Yeah.
Just working that hustle, auditioning. I recently just had a career change. I quit the service industry and I got a job with Creative Action.
Oh,
so I work as an interactive performer.
You're working with Matrix Kilgore over there.
Yeah, I was about to say, you're working with the Matrix.
Lots of really wonderful people. I work during the school year in the mornings as an interactive performer. I travel all around with my scene partner, and we teach fourth graders about how to handle bullying situations through interactive theater. So we just role play and teach kids how to be good people. And then in the afternoon, I teach pre-K through second grade theater after school. And it's wonderful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. I love that we're hearing a lot of people that have come in. I think somebody else here was, when I was a kid, pre-K teaching theater wasn't a thing. Elementary theater wasn't a thing. Middle school theater wasn't a thing. Theater didn't happen until sophomore year in high school
in
the school district.
I didn't have theater in middle school or in elementary school.
Where'd you go to school? I forgot.
I did elementary school in Fort Worth. I went to Lily B. Clayton in Fort Worth.
Lily B. Clayton.
Yeah,
I was just about to say, it does sound like you need to say
I do declare. Lily B. Clayton has the vapors.
Lily B. Clayton.
That's so great.
Oh, my. I do declare.
Bless her heart, that Lily B. Clayton.
Bless her heart.
And then I went to a college readiness academy. It wasn't right for me. My mom put me in a fine arts middle school.
Get out of town.
Yeah, it was
here
in Fort Worth, called Fort Worth Academy of Fine Arts.
Lovely.
Cool.
And then I went to Pascal High School, and then I went to Manhattanville College in New York.
Okay. So here's the deal: if the two of you were to play the lead role in any musical in the world, would it be?
Oh,
you've got to agree right now. But
any
two of you.
Musical.
Which one? Oh, which musical the two of you want to play the leads in?
Even the band and bad ones.
I want to be the Phantom.
You want to be the Phantom?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And you can be, what's her name?
You're gonna be Christine?
I will be Christine. I used to sing that in all right. middle school, and I could hit those notes.
So there we go. Phantom of the Opera.
The 30th anniversary tour.
Oh, with Emily Villarreal as the Phantom.
Mexican Correct. Girl. Changing it up.
Here you go. I can't. So.
Exactly.
The, speaking of Andrew Lloyd Webber,
the finger airplane.
Yes. Oh my gosh!
You're singing.
Andrew Lloyd Webber and Cheetah Rivera are getting lifetime achievement awards.
Well, oh, shouldn't
wow.
they?
They absolutely should. I mean, however you feel about Andrew Lloyd Webber,
he wrote Jesus Christ Superstar, yes. so the man could write. Well, crap forever to be okay. Although Nick and I were discussing song and dance is kind of everything, and we keep forgetting yep. that little nugget of goodness mm-hmm. in there. And I did have an obsession with Starlight Express in the 80s.
There you go.
Because roller skates in the audience.
Come on.
Come on.
Well, cool. So if you
School
if,
of Rock, he stuck it to the man. Come on. I mean, again.
Yeah, but he wrote Love Never Dies.
He's some good Andrew Lloyd Webber. Which
Love Never Dies?
Actually, the music in Love Never Dies is beautiful.
I
don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of songs in there that I really like.
I don't know.
It's not a show I want to watch, but the music and it is beautiful. Guess what?
But wait,
it's coming
wait,
on tour with
wait,
Broadway.
Stop,
you can check
stop,
it out,
stop,
Lisa.
Stop. Listen. You can hear a little bit of Love Never Dies right now.
Sounds
hear
bad.
It?
Yep.
Oh my. You know what? Not half bad.
You'll get to see it when
I
it's
may
here.
Be singing this in the shower tonight. There you go. Well, thank you guys for joining us backstage.
Thank you.
And come back and join us.
Yeah, yeah definitely.
And good luck with Cabernet. Yeah. And remember, if you made it all the way to the end of this podcast, email Lisa at offstageonair.com. Give us the name of one of the shows that was written, the music was written by Cole Porter. Porter that won a Tony Award. Okay, first one gets drinks, table, everything.
Yeah, the whole shebang.
The whole shebang.
The whole shebang.
Shebang it. See you, everybody.